Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the webinar on major curbs on foreign investments in corporate debt, analyzing the road ahead. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ruchir Sinha. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Well, thank you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our webinar discussing the most recent changes to foreign portfolio investment regime in corporate debt. I think the idea of broadly what we'll try to cover in about half an hour or 45 minutes at max is what are the changes that have been brought most recently by the RBI circular of April 28th followed by a May 1st circular, and what are the implications of those changes, and how do we see the foreign debt regime evolving now? I think just to give a little background to the foreign portfolio investment regime in corporate debt, I think it's pretty much the most popular route for investment in foreign debt today, particularly in some sectors like, you know, financial services and real estate infrastructure. In fact, a very significant majority of debt is routed through this avenue. Just to give a little background, I think this started in 2008, when the government introduced, the SEBI introduced the debt issue regulation guidelines on the premise that, you know, India had a good equity markets regime, but pretty much we didn't have a good bond market. And the idea was to develop a good bond market regime as well, because just like foreign equity inflows, foreign debt inflows are also equally important. What started happening, of course, later on was that the kind of market that we wanted to develop did not pretty much develop, and foreign portfolio investment regime and corporate debt was largely used, to invest in single assets or pretty much in a strategic way to infuse debt into corporates. And the trading was pretty much minimalistic. These FPIs were listed earlier on the wholesale debt market segment, and later on, even unlisted foreign portfolio, these non-convertible bonds were allowed on an unlisted platform as well. So the popularity was really pertaining to two or three significant factors. One was the ease of repatriability, because unlike the foreign direct investment route, which was seen as an alternative for foreign investors to, put to kind of invest in India, you could only invest in equity or instruments compulsorily convertible into equity under foreign direct investment. Foreign portfolio investment in NCDs gave them a new avenue to invest in freely repatriable instruments, giving them significant amount of tax optimization, because pretty much whatever you paid as an interest or redemption premium on these bonds was an expense. And of course, a lot of these bonds were structured in the form of structured equity in many cases, where these bonds were in the nature of equity kickers, where the redemption premium of the bonds was linked to either the cash flows of the company or the profitability. So while from a tax perspective, they maintained the nature of an expense, from a commercial perspective, they gave the investor pretty much the same rights as in, or the same economics as an equity investor, by linking the redemption premium to cash flows or whatever commercially agreed variable. There were also certain exchange control restrictions that were not applicable to foreign portfolio investor regime. For instance, in sectors like real estate or some of those sectors, the sector restrictions were not applicable if you invested through the FPI regime, also in sectors like NBFCs or other restricted sectors, where the exchange control restrictions which were applicable to FDI were not applicable to foreign portfolio investments. I think some of those reasons pretty much made this a very popular route for investments. In fact, as per a recent report, about 75% of foreign investment into real estate was structured by way of debt, most of it which came out of this FPI route. I think what this new circular of April 27th has largely done is that it has imposed significant curbs on the way this foreign portfolio investment route functioned till now. Till now, it was very easy. You know, if an Indian corporate wanted to raise debt, or if a foreign portfolio or if a foreign investor wanted to invest in debt for tax optimization or other reasons, just go and get a foreign portfolio investor registration, which was very easy. Pretty much almost everyone could get this FPI Category 3 registration and just subscribe to the non-convertible debenture issuance by an Indian corporate, and most of the debt would be subscribed to by one FPI. I think what they've done now is that they've brought in three broad changes, which I think will make, I think, overhaul the entire regime the way it was looked at till now. One is the restrictions in terms of diversification norms which have been introduced, which are investor-specific and investee-specific. Concentration norms in terms of how much can an FPI invest of the available investment limit, and certain other restrictions which I think we'll discuss in the course. So I think let me start with you, Simon. How do you see the diversification norms playing in, and what are these norms and how do you see their implications?
Thanks, Richard. So as you rightly mentioned, I think the entire intent of the FPI regime was to ensure a public listed market for debt as well, and therefore the graduation from listed to be listed, and then, you know, a leeway by the Reserve Bank of India to unlisted bonds. But I think the diversification norms now have been imposed in a different manner, wherein the requirement of the Reserve Bank of India pursuant to this circular is that an FPI and its related FPIs cannot invest more than 50% of any issue, any one corporate bond issuance. So what that means is that if a company is having a bond issuance, it will have to at least have two investors, if not more, where one FPI and its related FPIs cannot invest more than 50% of that issuance. Now, a question comes into to one's mind is that when you say any issue of a corporate bond, what happens in a situation where you have a prospectus that is valid for a year and you have, you know, various tranches? Is it a situation that it is the total limit of that issuance, or is each tranche looked at? And it appears that the Reserve Bank's intention is that it is a tranche by tranche restriction, and therefore at every stage you will have to ensure that an FPI and its related FPI cannot invest more than 50% of that issuance. Now, the second question that arises is that if you've made, for instance, an issue, if you've committed or if you've made an issue, if you've subscribed to more than 50% of a single issue currently, and you've committed to invest more, what happens there? The law does take care of that as well, where it says that if you have invested more than 50%, it's grandfathered more than 50%, but it does say that you can't invest anything more in that issuance. So therefore, while past investments might have been grandfathered, you can't make anything additional in that issuance, even if you've committed to it. The next issue that sort of arises is what is really this related FPI, because a specific definition has been included within these circulars, which is different from how you would typically look at related FPIs. However, I think the intent cannot be different from, you know, what the law originally suggested, where you looked at the UBO test to determine who a related FPI really was. And even though there is mischief that can be read into the language prescribed, where related FPIs have been defined to mean somebody that that administers or, you know, it can also be read to include common administrators, and maybe an administrator, different administrators may take you out of the entire definition of the related FPIs as defined under these regulations. The intent seems to continue to be that the UBO test should be looked at to determine who a related FPI really is. So that is really the investee company restriction. The next restriction, which is a little bit more draconian, is that an FPI today is required to diversify its portfolio within itself. And therefore, the restriction is that an FPI cannot sort of have an exposure of more than 20% of its corporate bond portfolio to a single corporate or related corporates. Now, what that means is that today, if an FPI has made an investment, for instance, in a bond issuance of $30 million, the next bond issuance that it makes or next investment it makes in corporate debt, the total investment between these two or the next it can't be more than 20% of its total corporate bond portfolio, which means that if your original investment was $30 million, your next investment can't really be more than $6.6 million because that will give you a total of 20% in your next investment. Now, again, the law seems to have grandfathered the earlier investment of $30 million, though it does say that if you've made more than 20%, you can't really invest in that corporate anything more. So therefore, even if you've committed to invest in that corporate an additional tranche, you are forbidden to do so by virtue of these regulations. Now, there is another requirement for a newly registered FPI, where that FPI today has to comply with these conditions within 6 months, because otherwise the first investment by a newly incorporated FPI, newly registered FPI, would flout these norms on day one. And therefore, a newly registered FPI has been given 6 months to meet with these requirements. It may not be sufficient time, but that is the time currently set out in these regulations. So the regulations do, or these directions do state that it is with immediate effect, and therefore a part of the regulations do grandfather previous acts, but it does apply with immediate effect.
So, thanks, Simon. Mustafa, from your perspective, I think you are the man in demand right now. Everyone will come to you to understand how do the concentration norms apply and what is the regulatory view on this. So I think maybe you could give a little bit of a background from your perspective and discuss the concentration norms.
Sure. Thanks, Ruchir. Thanks, Simon. Probably I'll just take a quick cue from where Simon ended on the diversification bit. I guess the only single positive I can see from RBI's intent on either diversification or concentration could be two-pronged. One is it wants to diversify the investor pool. Second is it wants to deepen the market. Having said that, I don't think the Indian debt capital market is ready enough to take on this test as of now. If I have to give you a very quick snapshot of, how the NCD market has performed from a macro perspective over the last 3 to 4 years. In 2013-14, when the dollar was at its all-time high, the single intent of the government then was to ensure stability to rupee, stabilizing the bond yields. And that's when in 14 it came out with the regulation restricting any investments by FPI in corporate debt less than maturity of 3 years. So any corporate wanting to do bonds or any FPI wanting to do investments in corporate bonds had to have a residual maturity exceeding 3 years. That year, there was a slack in investment pickup because of this norm, because then the major demand came in from a set of investors which used to do leveraged fixed maturity plan kind of products, which was a big pickup. And banks used to leverage outside India realized that their books are not open to credit for a period of greater than 24 months or so. Having said that, why we have seen a very, very exciting 2016 end or 17 in terms of bond market is a couple of factors where we've seen a big pickup, and almost all through last year we've seen auctions done by the government in terms of giving limits for corporate. A couple of factors there. One is lower borrowing costs. Second was banks were squeezing credit. They were not willing to give credit considering the situation of banks in India. Third, as Simon rightly pointed out, they moved from a regime of only listed to, you know, even unlisted instruments in addition to what was allowed before in terms of infrastructure sector. So those three factors were really favorable, and hence you saw a pickup. And even when there were auctions, you saw a lot of demand pickup from investors across segments. Come 2018, from a macro perspective, you see a lot of developed countries' bond yields pick up. Other things what have not worked in our favor, and hence you've seen a capital flight back, is INR against dollar is depreciating and is probably the, one of the worst performing currencies in Asia till date. You've seen the crude oil prices move up, and hence you've seen a lot of capital outflow happening this year. That led RBI to reverse its restriction that it implied in 2014 of giving the leeway to FPIs to invest in corporate papers having a residual maturity of more than 1 year. In that process, what it did was it also came out with the certain norms, which is acting as a curb in the current frame of mind, because it is then directly restricting structured deals or bilateral deals, as you may call it, because of the concentration limits or the diversification limits at a single FPI or an issuer level. So when we talk of concentration limits, RBI gave or increased the limit of corporate bonds of current outstanding from 5% to 5.5%, and ultimately 6% by the end of next the current fiscal. So it stands at approximately 2,667 INR billion, which means that a single FPI cannot invest more than 10% of the total limit, which is it cannot invest more than 266 INR billion. So that is the intent, and I guess diversified investor pool is something that RBI is hinting towards.
So I think while at one end they reduced the maturity from 3 years to 1 year, but I think in the process they've probably taken away most of this theme from what we have today. I think the way we look at this is, I think some means what the RBI is trying to do is trying to restrict the private debt regime that was used by the FPIs to invest in single corporates, and probably trying to diversify and make it more amenable to a public debt regime, which is, I think, what they also did with masala bonds by restricting related parties, etc., to kind of contract, trying to make the investor pool a lot more diversified. I think that's a debatable question, how effective that is. Will this really make this, will it really kill the root, or will it really result in adequate diversification? What it seems, at least from what we hear from our clients, is that I think that the charm of the FPI route or the benefits that they got, I don't think people are very, very keen to kind of progress, on the basis. I think from an implication perspective or a going forward basis, Mustafa, what are you seeing particularly from the people that you're hearing? I think one issue which I think you were mentioning is that It is only an RBI notification right now, but not really SEBI. So maybe you could just share that.
No, so honestly, the securities market is typically more so also governed by SEBI, which is the regulator here. So while RBI has come out with the circular, we are yet to hear from SEBI, and we assume the circular should be out anytime soon. And we will hope to see the circular being released by SEBI in line with what has been notified by RBI to avoid any disconnect. Having said that, on the circular from RBI, considering in April or a month back or 2 months back, they consolidated the limits for corporate bond and they do not have any subcategories. There is a lot of confusion in the market, or there are queries from clients. So to say, will or does this circular also apply to instruments other than corporate bonds, which are security receipts, securitized instruments? Those are the questions we've asked back to RBI, and we are hoping to get some clarification from them on what is the applicability of this circular to instruments other than corporate bonds.
Yeah, so at least I think the way we should look at it, or I mean we would like to look at it, is that even in the absence of the SEBI circular, I think at least believe that the RBI circular is in effect. So,
yes,
we should be careful about that. As regards the investment, as regards the diversification norms, etc., being applicable to security receipts as well, at least as lawyers, our plain reading is that it should not apply. But I think clearly it's always good to get a clarification from them. I think that gets me to the next obvious question, what next? And I think that was, one of the critical, one of the core subjects of this webinar as well, that what is the road ahead? And so those people who are looking at FPI in debt, doing structured debt instruments or structured equity instruments, either way, the way you call it, I think what are the options left for them? So I think if we categorize, I think there are broadly three or four or five routes that kind of open up. One is register yourself as a foreign venture capital investor, and you can do similar instruments. Or you come under the external commercial borrowings, and then you can lend to an Indian corporate. Third is you don't do either of these and go under the historic conventional foreign direct investment route. Invest in compulsorily convertible debentures, take out about 17% odd, although recently they've taken out in the new exchange control regulations, they've taken out the 17, the prime lending rate plus 300 basis points kind of threshold. But let's assume you can still, let's be conservative and say that you can take out about 17% coupon. And for the remaining bit, do a kind of capital reduction. That's the third option. And the other two options are that if you are a sustained long-term player in India and you are looking at a sustained growth in India, then set up an entity in India like some of the large institutions have done, either by setting up an alternative investment fund in India or by setting up a non-banking finance company in India. So let's analyze each of them. I think, Simone, if you can analyze between foreign venture capital investment and ECB as routes which people can explore, I think we can take up AIF and NBFCs in a separate bucket for longer-term players in India who want to set up base in India.
Sure. So I think the FVCI, the route was sort of developed for really venture capital and for venture capital undertakings. And that was the rationale behind granting certain leeway to certain kinds of investors that were looking to invest in certain kinds of companies. And that route continues to exist, except that because of the nature of or the leeway that is granted to these investors, the type of companies that they can invest in is also limited. Whilst I think previously, prior to 2008-2009, FPCIs were not limited by category of in which they could invest, in companies in which they could invest. Post 2008-2009, FPCIs were limited to a certain set of investee companies. And that became applicable to all FPCIs, whether registered pre-2028, 29, or after. And therefore, although the FPCI route is a great route, you have limitations of how much you can invest through that route. And secondly, is what kind of companies. And it's typically used for infrastructure companies. You also have, you know, certain kinds of technology companies, you know, that you could use this route for. But it's mainly for mainly used in the infra space. Now, the FPCI, like you said, Richard, you have similar instruments that can be issued, but it comes with this limitation. The next sort of route that could be explored is the ECB route. Now, the ECB route typically, you know, has gone through major rehaul, and now, you know, the way you categorize ECB, external commercial borrowing, is it can be either a foreign loan or a rupee-denominated loan. And the route is divided into three tracks by virtue of its maturity period and its currency. Now, the typical sort of route is 3 to 5 years maturity. You have a 10-year maturity, and you have a rupee bond. The concern with ECB is as follows. One is you have a long-term maturity. The second is there are only certain kinds of companies, again, that can actually avail of an ECB. These are in the realm of, you know, certain financial services sectors, infrastructure companies, REITs, financial services companies. These are the kinds of companies that can avail of an ECB. You also have, you know, restrictions on how much you can charge interest. So you have, you know, LIBOR plus 450 basis points. You also have certain tracks that can charge GSEC plus 450 basis points. And you have restrictions on what you can use it for. So, for instance, if you're doing a leverage to invest in capital instruments or the capital markets or equity investments, that is something that is not allowed under the ECB route. Now, you have also the rupee-denominated bond or the masala bond, which can be availed of by a larger set of corporates and don't have such restrictions on who can lend, because the ECB also, in addition to all the other restrictions, only a certain kind of investor can actually invest or can lend to through the ECB route. So you have the masala bonds, which is less constraining in terms of who can borrow and who can lend. But it comes with this overall sort of catch-all saying that a related party, you know, as defined under INDAS, right, cannot really lend or can't really avail of this route. So it becomes a little bit more constricting than what we were really used to. So therefore, although these are available routes, they come with a host of restrictions, which may not make it commercially feasible for someone to invest through this route.
Yeah. So clearly, I think the foreign venture capital investment route, FVCI, comes with ability to do certain instruments like optionally convertible debentures, which would be a dream for someone who's looking at an equity kicker, convertible, plus a debt kind of instrument with no interest caps, and which also legitimizes put options, etc. The challenge is that it's available only to a very limited set of sectors. And with ECB, I think, as Simone mentioned clearly, I think one of the biggest challenges is that the masala bonds, which could have worked well as an alternative to this, because of the higher amount of coupon that you can pay, which is base rate plus
450 points now, this is the revised track.
Yeah. But the challenge there is, again, that because of the accounting standards, related party means that anyone giving more than 50% of the total debt becomes related party. So you are pretty much, they cannot be a situation like FPI the way we had, where there's a single lender pretty much taking care of the whole debt. I think, therefore, a lot of our clients, in fact, have recently, when there was a challenge on whether the FPI limits will remain or not, and there was, a huge challenge on the debt limits that were being auctioned, a lot of our clients actually switched over to domestic entity models. They either were keen to set up an alternative investment fund in India or an NBFC. I think that's a question which is very likely to come now, that what can be done to do sustained lending in India. So there are both the options. I will quickly compare both of them for you. AIF has its own set of advantages, particularly in as much as an AIF is very easy to set up, a pretty straightforward process. Should not take longer. Now only because of the SEBI online systems, it's taking around 12 weeks. Usually it takes around 8 weeks. And hopefully when SEBI is better off with its teething issues with online filings and all, I think it should come back to the typical 6 to 8 weeks kind of a process. So it's ease of setup. I think the other significant advantage that an AIF offers is a complete pass-through in Category 1 and Category 2. So suppose an AIF is lending downstream, the portfolio company does not need to withhold anything. It makes the full payment to the AIF. AIF, depending on the nature of the investor, will withhold taxes. So for instance, if it's an investor from Singapore or Mauritius, the withholding will be done at the rate of 15% or 7.5% on the interest income. So that's a very significant pass-through benefit that the AIF and its investors get. The other benefit is that the thin capitalization norms that are otherwise applicable in case of a foreign investor will not apply to an AIF. They were recently introduced that any amount more than 30% EBITDA would not be allowed if the non-resident is the associated enterprise. So those kind of thin capitalization norms do not apply to an AIF. However, there are certain challenges in the AIF route because of which people sometimes gravitate more towards an NBFC. One of the two big reasons for this is, unlike an AIF, cannot leverage in India. And debt, as always, is always a game of margins, where I think an NBFC significantly scores higher because it can borrow in the domestic market from banks at much cheaper rates and obviously lend at significantly higher rates, where I think AIF loses out. NBFC, unlike an AIF, doesn't have the challenge of a limited life. AIF, generally the SEBI requires that should be around 10 years of life. Of course, in very exceptional cases, it's going to around 20. But typically, it's around a 10-year life where NBFC can be a perpetual vehicle. Third advantage of an NBFC is listing. Because if you are going to do sustained lending in India, you're going to build your book. How do you exit? And listing is a classic example of a good exit, which an AIF does not offer. In addition, NBFC above 500 crore kind of an asset size also has certain benefits in terms of SARFAC, entitlement to SARFAC, which an AIF per se does not have, unless, of course, AIF subscribes to listed non-convertible debentures. So I think those are some of the benefits of one over the other. Biggest challenge in NBFC over an AIF is the cash trap. And the fact that in an NBFC, if you have more than 500 crores of asset size, your concentration limits of 15%, single entity limit, etc., is a function of your own funds, which is a function of your tier one capital, which really means equity and shares compulsorily convertible into equity. Any other hybrid instrument or any other kind of instrument that the NBFC receives counts towards tier two, which does not qualify in computation of the concentration norms. So I think some of those are the pros and cons of NBFC versus AIF. More and more people are gravitating towards an AIF. Of course, if someone is looking for a longer term stay here and exit through a listing, etc., people are gravitating towards an NBFC. I think we are running
out of time. On the AIF, Richard, like you said, right, the diversification norms are based on the investable funds or committed funds as opposed to what you've invested on day one. So I think a big difference between what the FPI diversification norms are and what the AIF diversification norms are.
So an NBFC is on, it's on the invested capital that right. also, tier one capital, while in AIF, it's on the basis of committed funds.
Yeah.
So you have to, it's a 25% diversification that you require. I think pretty much that, we can discuss this on call on which route should you go for. I think one significant disadvantage, which I think a lot of investors will feel the pinch of, is the is the historic 194 LD kind of an kind of a tax benefit that was given to foreign portfolio investors, where an FPI investing in instruments that were giving a yield of up to about 14% was subjected to a much reduced withholding of just 5%. So normally interest withholding is about 40% in India, which gets reduced to 20% if you're a foreign portfolio investor, which further gets reduced to 15% if you're coming from Singapore, or 7.5% if you're coming from Mauritius, but nothing beats the 5% withholding, which is the lowest. I think that is something that people are going to feel a pinch of. But let's see how this goes. And Simon, Mustafa, any quick closing comments?
We do expect certain clarifications from the RBI, given the industry sort of reaction to this circular. And we hope that they will take care of some of the concerns or issues really here, because as you said in the beginning of this, Richard, we hope that these circulars don't make this a redundant route, in the hope of, because it will definitely not achieve the RBI's aim of increasing the public debt market, if that is the if that is in fact its intent.
No, correct, Samant. I guess closing comments from my side would be, you know, India is looking progressively to be a part of a global bond index at some point of time. So they cannot be having too many restrictive measures on this. And from a futuristic perspective, I guess there are four parameters on which we need to evaluate which structure is feasible. One is ease of onboarding. Second would be tax. Third would be hedging on foreign exchange. And fourth would be the repatriability. So these four parameters would be the key considerations from a future option perspective.
Okay.
So I think we open the floor for questions.
Yeah.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone wishing to ask a question, may please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two.
Sorry, we will just take two questions which have been sent to us on email, and I would request everyone to please send us their questions by email. On,
if possible, if not, otherwise on this call.
On webinar May 10th. Webinar May 10 at nishitdesai.com. I repeat, webinar May 10 at nishitdesai.com, and we'll take those questions as much as possible on this call. I think we'll quickly address two questions. First one is from Sudhanshu Kale. You want to quickly answer that?
Sudhanshu, I think your question was, as per the guidelines, all investments by you've talked about diversification norms. And you've asked, is there any time frame within which the stipulated percentage under both requirements is not met, the FPI will have to disinvest or reduce exposure actively? I think, as we pointed out in the beginnings, at the time when we discussed this, there is no requirement to disinvest. The previous investments have been grandfathered. The only restriction is that the next investment you make has to comply with these norms. So it does have an implication. For instance, if you've invested in a issuance today and you hold more than 50% of that issuance today, and you've committed to invest more than that, you cannot invest that additional committed amount. So you are stopped at the investment that you already have. So for instance, if you've acquired 75% of our debt issuance and you've committed to invest 25% in tranche 2, for instance, you will not be able to do that 25%. You are limited to that 75%. Similarly, if with respect to the diversification for the FPI itself, in terms of the 20% limit, if you have invested today, say, 30 million in one company, and that's the only investment you've made in corporate bonds, you are stopped at that. You can't really, there's no need to diversify or to divest that investment. But with respect to your next investment, you have to ensure that the next investment has to be 20% of your total exposure. So since your exposure today is 30 million, your next exposure can't be more than 6.6 million in another corporate group, because the total exposure would be 36.6. So I think that's how we are looking at these.
I think the next question we are addressing is of Tina Ragla from Hines. Hi, Tina. I think your question is the notification retroactive? No, the notification is prospective, although it does have certain implications on NCDs that have been issued prior, which Simon just discussed. Your next question is, what will be the process and timeline for converting existing NCDs to another instrument, such as a CCD or a compulsorily convertible debenture? That may not be possible because non-convertible debentures are issued under the foreign portfolio investment route. You cannot hold compulsorily convertible debentures under the foreign portfolio route. Therefore, any conversion that you need to that needs to happen will need prior approval of the Reserve Bank of India. We believe that should be forthcoming. Alternatively, the NCDs could be redeemed, and through another mechanism, fresh CCDs can be issued in that regard, which can be contractually achieved. I think while we receive other questions, maybe we can take some questions on the call now. Can you please open the lines for questions on the call now?
Thank you. Participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may please press star and one. The first question is from the line of Heman Danda from PwC. Please go ahead.
Sure. So this question was with regard to the 20% concentration limit. Let's say, the FPI has made investment in two groups, say A and B, at 20% limit each, which are unrelated. And subsequently, if A and B become part of the same group, would the FPI be required to divest and comply with the 20% requirement? Or would this condition have to be tested only at the time of original investment?
So the way we see it is that it has to be tested at the time of original investment and can't be tested post, because the law does contemplate saying that if you've invested more, you
yes.
will not invest further in that corporate. Therefore, it does give you a grandfathering should that situation arise. If at the time of investment you were in compliance with these regulations and because of circumstances you do not become compliant with the regulation, you are forbidden from making more investments, but your previous investment has been grandfathered.
Sure. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mahesh Mishra from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Actually, my question is again related to the earlier one. So there is a restriction which says that you cannot invest more than 20% in the related entities. So given the definition which is given by RBI on the related entity has a lot many things to be considered to define whether it is a related entity or not. And for foreign portfolio investors who are investing in India, is there any kind of, any source which is available where they can go and see that these are the related entities? Or, for them to actually derive which are the related entity for secondary market trade would be a very big challenge. So if there is any kind of source which could be relied upon, or the reliable source which could be used by the foreign investors before investing?
At this point of time, I don't think there is a source available, and precisely this is one of the questions we have put out to the Reserve Bank to clarify what happens or how do we determine related entities in a secondary market transaction. So we are hoping for clarifications to come across, but today as we speak there is no database available to test this criteria out.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Rati from EY. Please go ahead.
Hi. So I had a question with regards to the AIF regulation. Since considering that this is one of the way we can invest further, we can evaluate of setting a platform in India, would it be possible for the PE firms doing deal-by-deal drawdown of funds to have multiple schemes wherein there's only a single investor in all of these schemes, and the scheme makes and also satisfies 25% of the criteria under the AIF regulation for the investment condition.
No, sorry, can you repeat that question, please?
So would it be possible for an AIF scheme to be flouted in India, wherein each, and for a P fund, which does a deal-by-deal transaction, where for each deal it flouts a new scheme, and for each scheme it has a drawdown from a various different set of investors, and let's say
so
that
you're saying
also,
for each deal it will have a new scheme.
Yeah, because it may have different set of investors. Let's say
but every scheme needs to satisfy the diversification
25%. The 25% criteria, right. So in which case would it be possible that each scheme has only one investor in all of these?
That is not a challenge, at least the way we are looking at it right now. There are many, in fact, AIF has been pretty much binging upon the master feeder structure, wherein a lot of these AIFs are having a single, single entity which is pooling funds into the AIF, which in turn pools many investors. So I think single LP structure for AIF should not be impacted by this.
It's only the diversification which may be a challenge in that case, that 25% in case the same investor base should remain the same then.
If the investor is coming into an AIF, this circular does not apply to it. A single investor can come into an AIF. That stage diversification is not required. You don't require multiple investors at that level. The AIF, every scheme needs to obviously maintain the diversification threshold, 25%.
Understood. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chakravarti AB from Mentora Venture Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi. My question is there a direct implication change for startups attracting debt capital through Masala bond? If yes, what are those, if it is clear at this stage?
No, not through this circular. I mean, the Masala bonds themselves have gone through some changes, including interest rates, more rationalization with the ECB norms. But the FPI circular will not have any impact on the Masala bonds.
Yeah. This discussion is only centered around foreign portfolio investment corporate bonds.
Yeah.
Masala bonds is separate regime. This circular doesn't have any implication on that.
But it doesn't have any implication. Okay, sure. No, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sambit Das from PwC. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sambit. So I had a question. In case an FPI has subscribed to NCDs, let's say in 2016-17 financial year, considering the minimum maturity requirements have reduced to 1 year, can they now prematurely redeem all of the NCDs?
So the application today in terms of it applies only for new bonds. So the way we read this is that new NCDs can have a period of 1 year. The law does not seem to provide the directions are not clear as to whether existing bonds can be replaced. You can change the maturity period to 1 year. So that is today not contemplated under these regulations. And therefore, you would pass near the clarity from the Reserve Bank of India if we want to go down that route.
Sure. Thank you.
I think I will just take... because we receive a lot of questions on email also. I will just take a couple of those questions. I'm answering now a question from Avnish Singh from Tishman Spear on the macro industry specific for real estate. Question is, how do you see these latest set of regulations impacting the real estate sector and more specifically residential focused lending and preferred equity, which has also seen significant volumes of investments? Also, utilization of NCDs for regular equity investments impact. So I think clearly for the real estate sector, close to about north of 75% investment came through this foreign portfolio investment route. I think that is significantly, going to change with this, because I don't think the kind of structures that we looked at real estate under this route will be able to prevail now with these new diversification norms. I think most of the foreign investors have already moved over to having an alternative investment fund or an NBFC regime in India. Particularly for developers seeking foreign investment, clearly now there are very limited routes left, since foreign venture capital or ECB regime does not apply, does not allow real estate as one of the permissible investments. I think the most probable route other than seeking capital from NBFCs and AIFs or setting up your own is through the compulsorily convertible debenture route. You can invest in CCDs of an Indian real estate company, keep accruing the interest at 17%. There is a view that now you can accrue north of 17 also because the interest thresholds have been removed. So let's say you accrue at the rate of 20% and minimize the equity value left in the company. And at a later stage, you can do a capital reduction of the Indian company or a liquidation of it since it has now become fast track and pay a distribution tax close to around 20% on the remaining equity value. I see that structure is becoming more popular. And second is more and more foreign investors setting up their AIF or their NBFCs in India now and going forward. I think other question is from Kapil Gupta.
I think that Mustafa already answered that. That's fine.
Okay. So can we take other questions on the call?
Sure. The next question is from the line of Soumya Cheet from India Reading Research. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for this wonderful discussion session. I have one point. So I think the objective of this circular was to create some kind of protection against globally route of capital flight. So that's what we had seen in 2013, and that's what actually we are also seeing the current time. And the openness of FII to domestic bond market was the objective was to create more depth and more flavor to day-to-day trading with the presence of FII, but that didn't happen. So I think to a certain extent, the steps were prudent to reduce the volatilities to domestic market and to create
Can we just have the quick question?
The question is that the domestic, like the similar kind of restriction was also imposed for the mutual fund, but the public sector units were given some relaxation. So can we expect a similar kind of thing, the restriction of this entity-specific as well as holding-specific? Should there be any relaxation to PSU?
Yeah. I think Mustafa was mentioning that earlier, that there's an industry representation being made already requesting for some relaxation. We hope that something should happen. Representations are being made, but that's for anyone to see. Let's wait and watch what happens over there.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kapil Gupta from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Hi. So I had emailed my questions as well. I have a couple of questions. The one being, would a
I think you just, if you just check your email, Mustafa has already answered your question on related party. Is there anything else? Happy to answer.
So apart from the related party, I have one more question. Is that partly paid NCDs? Now, if my FPI fund has already subscribed to a partly paid NCD in the last year, and I have a couple of more tranches to be paid out, so would that then now get restricted because of this regulation, or I can go and complete that into a fully paid by paying out the two tranches?
No, if you want to invest in newly partly paid instruments,
that is prohibited.
That's prohibited.
I think existing partly paid also comes in a little bit of shadow, particularly because it is restricting any further. So I think we'll just need to take a view on that, Kapil. I think it's a good question. And we would, as lawyers, we would like to believe that any circular should be seen in light of it being prospective in nature. And if at all it's a mere commitment on a document that you've signed, I don't think it matters. But if I've already committed, if I've already subscribed to a partly paid instrument, I think that instrument is already in existence. And to that extent, I think logically and I think a legal view can be taken that it should be grandfathered, because there is no way left for me because I can't default on my payment obligations. So I think it will be very impractical of, you know, RBI or the SEBI to preclude me from making that investment. But yeah, there's a, so I think it's a call to be taken, and I believe that legally and logically we should take a call that's being grandfathered and we should be allowed to invest.
Plus the restriction, I mean, does seem to suggest it's futuristic, because it says shall invest in partly paid up. So it looks like a futuristic obligation, but I think that's...
So in our view, it should be okay.
Okay, I saw Mustafa's response. He has responded to only one leg of my question. So my second leg was, would having a common investment manager in the offshore jurisdiction make two FPIs a related FPI?
So Kapil, depends. I mean, if they do not hold any controlling interest or they do not hold any management shares, then I don't think that should be an issue, because ultimately you'd be doing a BO test as per the recent RBI circular. And by virtue of that, only by having a common investment manager, I don't think that should be an issue.
Okay. So, but if I have a common sponsor or a common carry shareholder, then there is an issue.
Then there is an issue.
Okay. Fine. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sunil Pishparoy from ILNFS. Please go ahead. The line for the current participant seems to have dropped off. We'll move on to the next. That is from the line of Ashutosh Sharma from Standard & Chartered. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, this is Pallavi from Standard Chartered. I have two questions, though unrelated. One is with respect to the FPI investments in, say, about 50% in the NCD of an Indian company. Can that same FPI take an exposure through the ODI route, wherein the TRS is issued by an FPI which is unrelated, which has a direct exposure to that same Indian entity? My second question is from the AIF perspective. So if so as per the FEMA 20R regulation, where AIF receives an investment, receive a foreign investment, the investment with respect to the AIF is to be as per what is required for the FPIs. So therefore, this debt circular would become applicable for such AIF investments, which are foreign investments?
So I think let me take question number one in terms of whether you can subscribe to the P note. If you, and I think this is where we will have to look for SEBI sort of regulations on this, because if you recollect previously also under the FPI route, whether you invest directly or through P-notes, it is aggregated to determine the 10% threshold. So it is unlikely that if SEBI is going to control this in the same manner that Reserve Bank of India is, it's unlikely that it will permit a P-note a P-note investment indirectly, because it completely defeats the purpose of this regulation or direction. So we'll have to wait for SEBI's direction on this. But in spirit, it although currently the law does not suggest, it just talks about investment by an FPI in a corporate bond. We'll have to wait for how SEBI looks at this and whether it also relates to what it's previously done in terms of how it's categorized P-notes to determine the FPI investment limits to this as well.
Yeah. Sorry, can you just repeat your second question? We missed that.
Sure. So the second question is with respect to the AIF. So as FEMA regulation, AIF receives money from the foreign investor, for the purposes of its investments, it has to follow the FPI investment restriction. It can invest in the instruments secured. security or instruments which an SBI can invest in. So therefore, following from there, would these circulars have an impact with respect to an AIF which has foreign investments in it?
No, I don't think so. This is really with respect to foreign portfolios, direct investments.
So therefore, the restrictions on the investments with respect to the debt, though the AIF has foreign investment, which could be an FPI, would really not impact the AIF investment?
No.
Sure, thanks.
Can we take the next question?
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Heman Danda from PwC. Please go ahead.
Sure. Hi. So this is with regard to the 50% limit applicability. In a scenario where the Indian company makes offer, of the corporate bonds to two FPIs or two subscribers, and only one of them participates, and the other does not invest, would this tantamount to a breach from an FPI standpoint?
Yeah, because it says here today, investment by any FPI cannot exceed 50% of the issue of any issue of a corporate bond. So if you're saying that a corporate bond has been an issue has been flouted,
yeah,
and only one investor has subscribed and the other has not,
yeah,
I think honestly, it's difficult to say that that is something that the law will permit, because this is as much as an investee restriction as it is an FPI restriction. So very similar to how SEBI requires, if, for instance, we're doing a QIP, you have to have two QIBs investing. You can't have a situation where you have only one QIB and say nobody else subscribed. You know, the issue is fulfilled. I think it's a similar sort of test that may be applied in this context.
Sure. And say a situation where the Indian corporate permits, saying that you can subscribe to these NCDs either as partly paid or fully paid. The FPI makes a fully paid subscription, but say the other second subscriber is an Indian subscriber. He chooses to go down the partly paid route. Would that be kind of in compliance with the circular?
This is only applying to non-resident.
Yeah.
Although I really would suggest that there should be only if you're offering it to non-residents, the instrument should ideally be fully paid, because you never know how the instruments get transferred later.
Sure. Sorry, just to clarify, maybe, say A subscribes to fully paid NCDs, as part of the same issue. B, who is a resident, chooses partly paid. So at this juncture, I was more at that point of time, would it be compliant, or would we have to see the value of investment? That was the thought process where I was coming from.
The language does say 50% of any issue of a corporate bond. So
yeah,
technically speaking, the issued bonds would be the total number of bonds that are issued, paid up plus.
Okay.
They paid
sure.
up, so therefore, you can read this. But I think, at all points in time, the spirit of the law must be met, because if tomorrow the partly paid up instrument is redeemed at only at the partly paid up, and it's a situation where you've not complied with the spirit even at the time of redemption, there are chances that the Reserve Bank of India may question that.
Sure. And just the last clarification, this 50% test would have to be applied at the time of issuance only, or would it be perpetual? What I mean to ask here is, let's say I have a 20% limit that is permitted. So there is FPI A who subscribes to 50% of the issue, and FPI B who subscribes to 50%. And say 6 months hence, A acquires the NCDs held by B at whatever is the fair market value. So post this acquisition, the 100% of the issuance is technically held by FPI A. So would that be kind of okay?
No. This would apply for secondary plus primary. So
it will be incumbent upon the FPI to check on how this is working.
Correct. So it can't be a situation where you have a warehousing entity to at the time of issuance then have that sale now.
So that way, even a partial redemption of one of the entities could be a challenge.
No, so the redemption separately, because if the terms of the instrument are, you know, maybe after 1 year, 2 years, gives the opportunity of any investor to maybe have a good option of the company or redeem it. You know, at that time, if the FPI today then holds more than 50% of the issue, you know, it should not be deemed to be in violation of the circular, right? Because you may not be able to time who redeems what.
Sure.
If you're buying a fresh instrument, it's the price with a primary effect.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ma'am, that was the last question.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks all.
Would you like to add any closing remarks?
No, this is fine.
I think
fine.
We can close the call. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, with that we conclude today's conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.